This is file number 20. Today's date is February 23rd, 2016. This is Jean McMillan. I am interviewing John Hoffman, who is on the Scoville Memorial Library Board and head of Buildings and Grounds, and he's going to talk about the renovation at the library that's going on right now. But first, we'll start with the genealogical information. What is your name?
John Hoffman.
All right. And when were you born?
October 12, 1946.
And where were you born?
Mount Kisco, New York.
Your parents' names?
My mother, Elizabeth Olmsted Warner, married my father, John Hoffman, took the name, middle name Norton. So my mother was Elizabeth Warner Hoffman as her married name.
How do you spell the Olmsted?
O-L-M-S-T-E-D, I think.
That's all right.
Before.
And you have siblings?
I have two older sisters, Sarah Adele Hoffman Ho, so full name, Sarah Adele Hoffman Ho, lives in Portland. She's 2 years older. And I have a sister who's 4 years older, Harriet Elizabeth Hoffman, who never married. My sister Sally married Bruce Ho, hence the last name H-O. So I get to say my sister's a hoe.
All right. Well, I have some hoys, but that doesn't work. Educational background, please.
I went to Briarcliff High School in Westchester County, town of Briarcliff Manor, and from there went to Colgate University from 64 to 68 with a BA majoring in geology, and then went to the University of Rochester from 68 to 70 and got a master's in geology. Got an educational degree from Wayne State several years later. That's in Michigan. Mm-hmm. So I have a teaching certificate.
And you got that in 1972?
I think that's about right.
Okay, okay. How did you come to the area?
I left Rochester to go teach at Cranbrook School in Michigan, and my wife and I were there for 15 years. And after a 15-year stint, at that point we had two children who were at ages that were reasonably portable if we decided to move. And we looked around, for us, for both of us, this was our first job, we looked around at the people that had been at the school for a long period of time and said, we probably didn't want to be like them. We also had aging parents back in the East Coast, felt that this was a good time to put our resumes out, so we did. And Bev got the most interesting job as the assistant director at the Hotchkiss School, and so we packed up and headed east in the summer of 1985 for her job at Hotchkiss.
And what about your job?
And I worked part-time at Hotchkiss that first year, and then the next year took a full-time position at Indian Mountain School, which is a junior boarding and day school, now K through 9. At that point, it was just
five through nine,
teaching 7th grade earth science and 8th grade physical science. And I stayed there from 1986 to 2006 when I retired.
Lucky. Who was the headmaster that hired you?
It was Peter Carlton. Mm-hmm. In his next to last year. So I actually overlapped with Peter Carlton my first year teaching there. And after he left the next year, at the end of 87, then there was a parade of interim heads. Mm-hmm. But eventually Derry Dunham became a head from, I think it was 92, and he left with me in 2006. I may be off
yes.
a year on the beginning.
That was his last right. year. Because
I know we left, Derry and I left together, and I can't remember exactly the year he came, but he was there about 15 years, give or take a year or two.
Because that was the last year that any of Foster's colleagues at Indian Mountain would have known who he was.
Okay.
And I was asked to give the Macmillan Prize that last year.
Yeah.
I asked you what you liked best about the school.
I think once I figured out the age group, then what I really liked best about them was their real willingness to get excited at times about school. They could forget that they were, in fact, middle schoolers and beginning to learn about peer pressure. They were all beginning to discover that they had some interest in learning that was just because their parents said they had to go to school and you know, that's what they did. But the little lights were beginning to go on that oh, this is something that really interests me on its own. And, mm-hmm. and as a science teacher, I got to see that much more with those 7th and 8th graders than when I was teaching older kids at Cranbrook
yes.
prior to Indian Mountain.
Yes. The light bulbs do come on early.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's a wonderful thing to see because it may morph into a lifelong interest that was fostered by something in your class, and that's
yeah. And they're also learning how to who they are and how to treat each other. And so on any given day or any given week, they're constantly trying on different personas.
Oh, yeah.
And those personas they find interesting. Other people find them interesting and some days offensive, and then because they're middle schoolers, they don't know how to apologize, and that sets up all kinds of friction because nobody knows how to apologize very well as middle schoolers, and so they need referees.
Sometimes that carries over into adult life, too.
Don't it?
Oh, yeah. You became a member of the Scoville Library Board in 2010?
Yes.
And how were you asked to join?
Sue Morrill was on the board at that point, who's someone who's been very active in the town over many decades.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, oh, this is easy. when I said, what does it involve? And she said, oh, you'll be great at it. And
which you are.
And I hadn't ever been on a board, so I said, well, sure, why not? I did want to give something back to the town,
mm-hmm.
and this seemed like as good a way to find out if that would work as any. So I said,
and
yes.
You are giving a lot back to the town. How many people are on the library board now?
It's about 15. It's a number that varies somewhat.
Mm-hmm.
We can be as high as 17 or 18 if there's a bunch of really good people who might say yes in the short term, mm-hmm. but we might dip below 15 briefly.
And what's the term of office?
It's supposed to be 3 years with a renewable three-year second term if you are interested.
And who now is the president?
It's a man named Noel Sloan, who I think came about the same year I did.
Okay.
So I think he's in or about the end of his second three-year term with me.
And in what capacity are you on the library board?
They really needed somebody for building and grounds, so I took over for Steve Klein, who actually left the board the next year. And pretty much it's been me building and grounds for much of the last 5 years. I've had some help from another board member named Andrew Torres, whose wife does work at Indian Mountain. But that's pretty much it.
And what are some of the things that you've had to maintain?
The tower is a constant, the chimes and the
yep.
clock.
Yeah.
There are not many companies that repair
that kind of clock.
Big clocks like that.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we're on our third vendor. The other two have just stopped doing this. I don't know how many. Well, I'll have to keep working on that. The roof has needed constant attention because there are big turrets that back up snow.
Mm-hmm.
And on a snowy winter, even with a lot of good flashing under the roof, we have porous stones, and some moisture comes in on a regular basis.
Oh, yeah.
There's been grounds work with some regularity. 2 years ago, the big line of trees east of the parking lot, big white pines mostly, we had taken down. We were quite worried that they would continue to fall on our neighbor's roof, in the garage. She has already repaired that once, and so we did that. We had an offer to pay for it, a gift, and I got a great price from Mike Root, local tree guy, and he did a great job. And then Dick Bunce did all the cleanup afterward, and Judy Murphy at Old Farms Nursery supplied the new plantings, and people are now getting used to it, and we think it looks great.
Who takes care of watering and pruning and that sort of thing? Does Judy do that too?
She gives me advice, but
okay.
I have done all of the watering.
You've done all the
It was very dry after the new trees went in, and so I was over there usually two or three times a week watering all the trees, the new trees.
Does anybody clean the gutters at the library? My office overlooks a couple of the gutters, and I just wondered.
I don't know if Sheldon Swart or Peter Barron, either of those people do that on a regular basis.
I know Peter Barron. Who was the other gentleman?
Sheldon Swart. He does the lawn, leaves and lawn and related needs on the grounds.
Okay.
Peter is more building, handyman. We've had roof work done on a regular basis, and so I think that when the roof people have been here working on the gutters, they probably have cleaned them. We've also needed to work on the stones out in the front of the building. That's a continuing need also. When the handicapped ramps were put in, the stones that allowed the wheelchairs access to have a ramp, those stones are crumbling. They're actually not stones, they're concrete.
Yeah.
Artificial things, and the capstones of that need replacing regularly.
Just like a house.
It's
constantly
just like
maintaining
house.
It. Now, we're going to talk about the present renovation.
Okay.
When did it start? When did the idea start percolating? Any idea about renovation?
The first idea of doing anything of this sort was probably 4 years ago, or thereabouts, when Noel Sloan, probably with others on the board who I didn't know of at the time, were thinking that it was time to make the library look a little bit more like it did when it was first built. And the first idea was to simply move the children's library to the back of the stacks area and take the children's area and restore that as the reading room. That initial idea, which was relatively simple, morphed into increasingly larger projects as we looked at costs involved. And when you look at one cost and someone says, well, if you're going to spend that, why don't you do this?
Mm-hmm.
And so the initial idea came from Noel, and it took on a life of its own.
Like Topsy, it grew.
It grew.
I was under the impression that the idea was to join the two floors from the inside. I had no conception that it originally started with moving the children's library elsewhere.
The joining of the floors, which is now part of the plan, was not part of the original plan.
Mm.
That came
later.
Quite a bit later, after we had discarded an internal elevator because it was so darn expensive.
Yeah.
And we didn't legally need an elevator because you could get to the Wardell room, the bottom floor, from the exterior.
So you didn't need a handicapped...
So we didn't need internal access for any project because there was external access to begin with.
Okay.
But when we hired Poesis, and they looked at a couple of designs that would do this, and then said, but wait a minute, why don't we just cut a hole between the two floors? When that first idea came along, and they developed it from an idea to a real possible design concept, and could do so what seemed to be at a reasonable price, it made perfect sense because most of the people who would go from one floor to the other in fact, do not need an elevator. So we would catch, I don't know if it's 99%, but a huge percentage of people on a nice stairway, which is what's going to happen now.
So the purpose is to move the children downstairs, put in a stairway so that you can get between the two floors, and refurbish the main floor so it looks more like what it did earlier in the century?
Yeah, really multiple things that are happening here. One was to restore the reading room to its original grandeur. Another thing now is, of course, to connect the two floors. Mm-hmm. In fact, our fundraising was called Campaign to Connect, but it was not just to connect the floors, but it was connect with the town and make the library more relevant for this century. So to that end, built into this whole obvious renovation are a lot of things behind the walls that people won't see, which is upgrades in all kinds of technology, making more small spaces within the library for people to work individually with their own electronic devices, and to have spaces within the library where they could have small group meetings with really up-to-the-minute, highly current technological equipment, screens, use of GoToMeeting software, so that you can have groups of individuals meeting and be scattered across the globe and be working out of Scoville Library in rural Connecticut.
It's turning into more of a media center than simply a repository of books.
It will have media center components.
Okay.
Yes, it will. And also, because our fundraising had been so successful up to this point, the board was able to consider taking the old auditorium part of the library, which is the south part of the library, which had been redone, I'm going to say decades ago, I'm not sure how many decades, and a false ceiling put in there. That is now going to come out, and that auditorium space, what you might think of as the old circulation room, the old, where magazines were and new books, that low ceiling is going to come out, and the original high arched ceiling, called a barrel ceiling, will be re-exposed. That was not part of the original design, but it is part of the plan now. So the Emerson, the Wardell room gets redone. There's a stairway. The kids have a new, more compact space that's going to feel more fun with some of the original stonework of the building as part of their walls. They'll have a platform. The children's librarian will be with them down there. The books will be more accessible in a small, confined space. The Wardell room will be updated technologically. Those two spaces will overlap as needed, so the Wardell room can expand into some of the children's area. The children's area can expand into the Wardell room as needed. Those overlapping areas can be closed off by a large sort of accordion-like partition when need be. But most of the time, that partition probably will be open, because when there's an event in the Wardell room, there won't be activity in the children's area and vice versa. So those two areas, the new stairway, the barrel ceiling, there'll be a new young adult area near where the old water cooler was at the top of the stairway. The tower room, where the chimes are, that will be reconfigured. It used to be the young adult area. Now it will be another meeting space, if you will, with beautiful glass doors separating it from the rest of the library. And down near the director's office, there'll be two spaces we call nooks. One will be a high technology nook, and the other one will be just an open space for groups or individuals to be in. Both of those nooks will have beautiful glass doors on them, so they can be closed off if need be.
Bottom floor. Have you done away with the kitchen area?
The old kitchen that used to be down there will be moved to a more internal spot that's not, neither was open to patrons, but there will be a continuing kitchen area, and a new staff area will be part of that.
When I was on the Friends of the Scoville Library and we were doing the tent drinks and hors d'oeuvres for the pre-sale of the books, we were using that kitchen as setup.
Right.
And when we were doing TLC meetings there, we were also using that kitchen for refreshment setup.
Right.
Okay.
So there'll be a longer walk, but there still will be a kitchen-like space.
Okay. How is it being funded?
Probably 90% and maybe more will be coming from the fundraising efforts within the community.
So it's all private donation?
Private donation. We did not get any grants. We will take some money from endowment if we need to, but we won't know that until the next year completely unfolds and we see. There's some, when you do a project like this, there are wild cards in the construction world of costs. Many of them are not pleasant, but some of them can be.
And you have to deal with it as it comes.
Right.
When do you expect the project to be finished?
We expect a mini reopening on March 1st, 2016, down with reduced services down in the old Wardell Room. Mm-hmm. We will set that up with newspapers, magazines, new fiction, new nonfiction, and a couple of chairs, and you'll be able to check out the things there. That bottom floor will be available for that kind of use, but the full, real, grand reopening, we're hoping late in May, when not only the bottom floor will be reconfigured the way it should be, but the upstairs will be done, and we hope to have a gala opening for the whole town so everybody can see what they bought.
A big party.
Yeah.
That sounds like a good idea.
It's all a variation on, and it takes a village.
Oh, it does. It does.
For this to work, it took all kinds of skills at the board, took all kinds of people in the town. It's just, people were supporting their community by doing this.
It is a community center.
It is. If it were a store, it would be the anchor store in town.
Yeah. George Tully used to show movies Friday nights, I think. And there's a chess club, and there's bridge, and there's book clubs, and we used to, the Historical Society and the library sponsor lectures. And so it is a community center, fortunately. And a lot of people use it. And we miss it when it's not there.
Yeah.
I miss it a lot.
Sure.
Will the director's office remain where it is now?
Yes.
Okay. And my office upstairs will remain where it is now?
Yes.
Okay. All righty. A few names, I think. Who is the architect?
The people that have done the design work for the building, and then also what's called the FFE, the furniture, fixtures, and electrical work, lamps, chairs, and so on. It's called Poesis Design, P-O-E-S-I-S, Poesis Design.
And they're in Lime Rock?
Their home is in Lime Rock. They have a small office in Millerton. And they are a husband and wife team, Rob Bristow, B-R-I-S-T-O-W. He is responsible for the building design work, and then Pilar Profit, P-I-L-I-R, P-R-O-F-F-I-T-T, has been responsible for all the interior design work, rugs, chairs, tables, lamps, paint colors, flooring, everything like that.
Are they going to put the portraits back?
They will go somewhere, and I don't know where yet.
And I hope that they won't find the original brass labels that got lost, but I hope they'll have somebody label them so the public knows what those portraits are.
Send an email to Claudia in case I forget.
Yes, I shall.
Me.
Who is the contract management company?
It's being done by Burlington Construction out of Torrington. We signed a construction management agreement with them, so they arranged to have the work done as opposed to doing it themselves.
Okay, so they're subcontracting it.
They subcontract most of it out. Okay. They have a on-site job manager who doesn't just sit there, but actually, you know, does things as well.
Oh, so that's good.
It's very good, because otherwise we'd pay him to sit there and watch other people do some things. But he's quite talented and a terrific guy.
Who's doing the plumbing and heating?
Decker and Beebe, who has done work for years there, so they know it.
Yeah.
And that's the best way. So we have told Burlington, in some cases, that we want local people to do or continue to do work in the building, and Decker and Beebe is one of them.
Okay. You talked about the barrel ceiling, which is, as you go into the library, it's going to be on the right.
Yes.
Are you doing any ceiling changes in the area to the left as you go in?
No.
Okay, so it's just the barrel ceiling over where they used to have the computers and the magazines and so forth.
Okay. It's a fairly big deal.
Oh, yes.
Though, to do that.
Oh, yes. And if I've got this in my mind right, you walk in to the library through the main doors, and you will be facing the staircase that goes down, and the circulation desk will be on your right?
Right. The current circulation desk is straight... Yeah. Straight on when you walk in. The new one will be to the right, and that will be done. That will be designed and actually fabricated by Puisis Design.
Okay.
As will this new stairway connecting the two floors. A lovely 4 foot wide grand staircase that they actually fabricate themselves.
And I hope, unlike the staircase at Hotchkiss that was marble, I hope they carpet it.
This won't be carpeted. It'll be white oak.
That's even better. Have you run into special problems that weren't thought of?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, for instance, in removing the barrel ceiling, we can't just have somebody come in and take the old vermiculite insulation out. Vermiculite is defined by the EPA as a hazardous material, so that has to be done under those guidelines, and there will be a several-day period when the parts of the building will be blocked off with plastic sheeting and nobody will be allowed in except the people doing the work. So there's that. There's a new double doorway down outside the Wardell room facing the stream, and there will be a canopy over that, and it has taken months to get the ironwork installed and fabricated so that that canopy will be supported strongly enough so that during periods of, during winters of lots of ice and snow, it won't collapse. So that was one of those small things.
Now, you told me one of the things that was particularly important was an oversight committee. Who is on that oversight committee?
The board didn't feel, once you signed a contract to Burlington, that you could say, okay, have at it. There needed to be a smaller group to meet with Burlington Construction and Puisis Design on a regular basis to talk about what are you going to do and who's going to do it and how much is it going to cost and are they doing what you wanted them to do? And are they doing it in a timely fashion?
Mm-hmm.
So this, there were several committees early on in the process, but over a year ago, all the responsibility fell to what's called the Renovation Oversight Committee, the ROC. That includes me, John Hoffman, as chair. Noel asked me to chair that, much to my horror.
which you'll do a fine job.
Isabel Sloan is on it. Andrew Torres is on it. David Harris is on it. Warren Carter. Those are the board members. Claudia is on it as director. And the two people from Puisis Design are on it. So we meet every, we've been meeting every week for about an hour and a half or 2 hours since January or February 2015. And we also meet with representatives from Burlington, or I do, with usually one or two, one other person from the ROC and the Poesis design people. We call it the contractors meeting. So sometimes at the contractors meeting, there's me, one other person from the ROC, Rob Bristow, Pilar Prophet, representatives from Burlington, and then sometimes some subcontractors, sometimes not, and we talk about how things are going and what's getting in the way, what needs to be resolved.
And there's a value to that because everybody is communicating with everybody else, so you know what's going on.
So it's a little like a family. Sometimes hiss and spit at each other, but what you do in the long run is build scaffolding so that when there are future things you need to talk about, you're not seeing each other for the first time.
You built a relationship so that you can talk about something and work it out and do a compromise. Mm-hmm. Okay, what have I not asked you about this renovation that I should have?
Now, you asked me that before when we talked about this.
Yeah, well, I want to cover my bases as thoroughly as possible.
That it's. I think what I've realized from this whole project is how a tremendous group effort it is, and it takes people with very different skills. That this never would have happened if a few people on the board early on hadn't dreamed it, and then it couldn't have happened without people with development skills to take on the task of raising money to do that. It couldn't have happened without a few board members to meet every Friday for 3 hours or 4 hours to talk about how it's going on a very concrete level. So there are people with abstract skills, people with concrete skills. Mm-hmm. There are the actual people who do the design work, who do the construction. None of this happens without the full synergy of all these people. So that's really, I think...
It takes a village.
So it takes a village.
It really does.
Yep. If you just have the vision, that's not good enough.
You have to have all components of it.
And you have to have a community who's willing to part with the money to make this happen. Who say, this is our community.
It's a very generous community in many ways. I've done a number of these interviews with a number of committees that, well, how do you get your funding? Well, we ask. And they always get their money. And they always are able to do what it is that the community feels is important. And this is a major undertaking. But it's coming along nicely.
For someone who's never done development and never gone into somebody's home and explained the project and asked them for $2,000 or $5,000 or $10,000... It's really daunting the first time you do that. I'm sure you get better at it, but it was really hard for me to do that.
I can see where it would be.
Yeah, we didn't hire somebody to do this for the board. We took it on as the board, and so various board members
went out and did every member canvas
and talked to 2, 5, 15, 20 people who you knew, mm-hmm. and of course there were many mailings. And it all somehow worked. And
it worked because a lot of people have put a lot of effort into this.
Well, people care about the library.
Oh, they do.
That's what we've learned. It's the quintessential Salisbury icon. It's the one thing that if it wasn't there, would break the most number of hearts.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you very much for your time and your information.
You're very welcome.